right. Hey, if you want to find a place to land, we are going to jump into a few things together. So I must confess, it's already been alluded to, but it's kind of fun. Like, I'm walking up here. We kind of record our gatherings and stuff and share those. And I see the communion elements. We've kind of got those going a different direction. We got our, like, paper box with our fishy crackers. Something about it, like, screams to me. And I don't know if it's the weather change, but, like, I feel like we're almost camping and we should just build a campfire. And part of me is like, this is our last night. No one would know. So, like, if any of you wants to get that together. No, it's good to see you and be with you. And I just want to say a huge thanks. So many folks from our community jumped in with so many folks from New Community this morning and made the move happen. There's a lot of good going on. And one of the things I love is just, you know, we talk a lot about we're hoping to be the kind of community who, by all means, see the benefit in gathering together and opening the scriptures together and worshiping collectively. Those are timeless, beautiful things the church has always done, right? And yet, at the same time, there's something about being a group of people who we work together, we can play together, we can go through our really beautiful, joyous times together, we can go through our really tough times together, we can actually just go through our normal times together. And even today was just another reminder of that, and I'm pretty stoked. So I want to say thank you to you for being you. I also want to take a few minutes and introduce what we're doing, just kind of reintroduce, and then introduce a really, really great friend of mine who I'm really grateful you're going to get to meet. So just to catch you all up, we jumped in a few weeks ago into this pathway, and the intention was, what if we could really take all the stuff we know about faith, have heard about faith, maybe we were just hearing about faith, and what if we could kind of put it on the ground a bit? What if we could find tangible ways to practice the faith? It seems like the scriptures lead us there. It seems like the Christian church throughout history has really been about that. I would say probably at its best moments. It's actually not just talking about or, you know, pontificating about things, but it's actually practicing the faith. And we think also by doing this, Chris was alluding to this father who is, he really is, his posture is one of meeting us, loving us, walking with us, helping us become our true whole selves. We think this process we're on can help that really shake out. And so thanks again for joining us. Tonight we're going to continue that by looking at two practices that go hand in hand that you've probably heard of actually in some way, shape, or form, prayer and solitude. And I really couldn't be happier to have the guest practitioner who's with us tonight to be here to walk us into it. So Eric, would you come here for a minute? So Eric and I met probably going on like 10 years ago. I don't think it's quite been that, but we're pretty close. And I had that vision of like you on that bicycle and that cowboy hat. You should have like rolled in on that. But we met years ago, and my take would be by just spending time together, and that's kind of a theme, right? That's how this all works. We spent time together. We traveled a little bit together. We've kind of taken the time to listen to each other. For me, there's been this like deep and growing brotherhood with you. And I actually, my in-laws moved here last year, but I used to tell everyone before, Hannah and I didn't have any family here, but I had family here, you know? And Eric's been huge in that with me. And I really am not speaking in, you know, kind of flowery language to describe. I couldn't be happier to have you meet him tonight and to have you talk about what you're going to talk about. So much love to you. Thank you. Bring it in. And honestly, yeah, share the love. Share the love. Just like Dave was here last week and Eric's here today. So we keep the hair thing working. Like, theirs works this direction, and mine works here. So, like, we typically take pictures with them on the outsides and me crammed in the middle. We'll leave that to your own imaginations. Thanks, man.
Can I? I'm going to pull up that one image here in just a second. Just hold off until I read the first line of the verse. Did you say I was from Jacob's Well?
I did not. I thought not.
Me and my wife, Leela, who came with me, and Sue and Bill, who are our bodyguards, are right there. We always travel with protection in East Central. We're from just across the freeway where we pastor a church called Jacob's Well. Been there for 11 years. Met Justin pretty much right at the beginning of that season for us, and have been close and I would say true friends since. So it's awesome that he finally let me come in out of the basement and say hello to you. And it's good to be here together. Talking about prayer and solitude, and I'm going to just read one passage primarily today, and I just want to read a little bit, one little line out of it before we get going to kind of set maybe your heart at ease on the subject, because sometimes the thought of solitude and prayer in this day and age is kind of hard to figure out. And I think if you've been around the church for very long, prayer is always talked about, but it's kind of hard to figure out. And a lot of people say it's important, but not everybody does it, or everybody's experience with it is hit and miss. And so whenever the subject comes up, it usually feels like it's going to be some kind of shame game or some kind of environment where we're going to not measure up. So Jesus said in Matthew 6:6, "But when you pray, go into your room and shut the door and pray to your Father who is in secret. And your Father who sees in secret will reward you." Let's bring up that picture there. Hopefully the quality is okay. Yes, you did. So this is a picture of a bathroom door. Does anybody relate to this picture at all? Any parents in the room? You know what this picture and that verse I just read proves? Jesus didn't have kids. You know the bathroom experience where you're looking for 5 minutes to get away and the fingers are coming under the door and the dog's trying to put his nose under there and the cat paw is doing one of these. When I read this verse, that was the first thing I thought about is, Jesus, obviously you didn't have children. When you say shut the door and pray to your Father in secret, sometimes that idea is hard to mesh with the reality of where our lives are at. And so what I love about the passage we're going to look at, I think it applies to everybody and anyone and anywhere, a simple methodology on how to approach God in prayer that fits pretty much whatever opportunity in life or whatever season in life you're at. And so it's the opening to the Lord's Prayer. We're not going to look at the Lord's Prayer today because I think Jesus kind of sets us free even before he talks about what you can pray. He lets us free in talking about how we can approach prayer. So we're going to look at that verse in just a few moments in Matthew 6. But I read a quote that I think is helpful to this discussion of prayer and solitude. There's an old story about an archer who was giving a monk a hard time because he would take so many breaks walking in the mountains, which a lot of us get away to the monasteries and stuff and joke about how sometimes it's hard to explain why that's important. But this archer was giving a monk a hard time because he was taking all these breaks walking in the mountains. And he said, "Sir," the monk said to the archer, "Sir, please pull back your bow." The archer did, and the monk told him, "Hold it, hold it, hold it," until the archer screamed out, "But if I leave tension in my bow all the time, it's going to break." And the monk said, "Precisely." There's a reality about prayer and solitude that I think God designed us to experience. And that is that reality that we cannot do everything, bear everything, endure everything. There's so many things that go on in the world, it's sometimes hard to know where your heart and mind should be and how to carry all the things you know, all the things that you should be concerned about, all the things that you know are important, but you sometimes don't know if you have enough room in your heart to even shove another thing in that you're supposed to be concerned about. Every week in the news, it's another event and some other tragedy, and soon you feel overwhelmed with this idea of, I should be some kind of prayer warrior or some kind of monk or some kind of mystic that's always communing with God and praying and helping change things, and it can be overwhelming. And sometimes it's easy to just kind of set everything aside and say, I'm not sure even how to be that person or what to do. And Jesus said in Matthew 6:5-8, I'm reading in the New Living Translation, some simple things about prayer. He said, when you pray, don't be like the hypocrites who love to pray publicly on street corners and in the synagogues where everyone can see them. I tell you the truth, that it is all the reward that they will ever get. But when you pray, go away by yourself, shut the door behind you, and pray to your Father in private. Then your Father, who sees everything, will reward you. When you pray, don't babble on as the Gentiles do. They think that their prayers are answered merely because of repeating their words over again and again. Don't be like them, for your Father knows exactly what you need even before you ask Him. Okay, so there's some major content, most of it in the Bible, that you're going to find on prayer specifics. What do we get from this? A few things I just want to share with you tonight. Pray when you want to pray. Don't be an actor. Pray privately more than publicly. Pray meaningful words more than multiple words. Relax. God's got you in prayer already. So I just want to break those little thoughts down just a little bit in our time together, if that's going to fit with everyone. Number one, pray when you want to pray. You notice how he said two different times, when you pray, which I don't know about you, but that just set me at ease right away. When you pray. There's no qualifier there. There's no have to. There's no demand. There's no do it this way or at this time. It's just this open invitation that when you pray, and that may be different for everybody. Maybe you're a morning person. Maybe you're a night person. Maybe you have a home where you have the ability to shut things away. Maybe you don't. Maybe you're a car prayer or a shower prayer person, or you're someone that can pray in an environment where there's a lot of noise. Some people are, if you're a student, some students like it really quiet, and they have this kind of like, you know, monastic experience with studies where it's got to be pristine and no distraction. And other kids, a number of my kids that were in my home, it's got to be loud. So the music's on and they could have the TV or the, you know, YouTube going, and it's all this activity, but they're still accomplishing what they need to do. Some people can connect better in a coffee shop with the Lord and commune with God than they can in the quiet of their own house. So I don't know what and where and how and what season you may be in, but Jesus opens up the discussion to say, when you pray, which I think is very invitational and kind of lets us put our guard down a little bit. Notice this, that there's freedom in that. And I think one of the things we have to think about, that when I say, when you pray, ask yourself a simple question. Do I even desire to? Is prayer a desire or a duty? If you feel right now that it's a duty, and I think we all do in the sense that we know it's right, we know it's good, we know we should. But if we push deeper beyond that, the question is, when you pray, is it because you want to pray or because you feel like you should pray? You know, and if we break that down even more, if I was to ask you, when you talk to your spouse or your wife or your boyfriend or your dad or your mom, is it a duty or do you desire to do it? Do you look forward to being together to talk, or do you feel like that's going to, maybe how your day went, it might depend. But in general, I think we're all conversationally want to. Maybe the level of conversation is different for each of us. Maybe we don't have 10,000 words. We have two or less. Or maybe we have a lot more words. But in general, we want to be together and we want to talk, right? And I think that kind of posture, a conversational reaction with the Lord, is what Jesus is laying the groundwork here. Where's your desire and where's your sense of duty? I meet too many Christians that have been taught for so long that their spirituality with Christ is a duty, that it seems like two people living together that don't love each other anymore. They're roommates with Jesus, but they're not married. They just attend the same things together, live in the same house, do all the right stuff and maintain life. But if you ask where's the desire or where's the passion or where's the fire, it's not there. They just live together. And I think it's easy sometimes in this day and age to kind of get there, especially in prayer, where you got your list prayer type people, you know, where we got to get through all this, and if you don't, then you've not, you know, maybe someone's going to fall off their bike that day or something. You have this idea that, you know, if you don't get through everything you're supposed to do as a duty, you can lose that. Second thing, don't be an actor. Jesus' whole language there about praying in public and praying in front of people, turning your spirituality into something that everybody else is going to look at and judge, I love when we go on retreat, one of the things we do is we use written out prayers so that nobody has to think up what to pray. Nobody has to impress each other in the pastor circle about whether or not they've got the more spiritual prayer or, you know, they're more this or more eloquent or whatever. We're all praying the same thing together. And what I learned the first time I did that with Dave and Justin, it set me free from having to think about anything. I could just pray what was written down and let the words be the words of my heart. And I didn't have to manufacture anything. I think too often prayer gets put into that place where we are performing. Or we're trying to present ourselves in a certain way. And if you think about the Lord being with us and knowing whatever mask we might be putting on, it becomes kind of a ridiculous endeavor if you think about it, right? You're going to go before the Lord and act with Him. You're going to go before Him and just, you know, crunch it out and make it happen because you want Him to be pleased with you, or are you honest to be able to just say, you know what, I'm not there today. I need to pray for the want to pray, even. God wants our heart open and not veiled with some kind of mask. And the word hypocrite there is just a word out of the culture that was an actor, you know, someone who plays a part, someone who steps on the stage and acts a certain way. And the second thing Jesus says about prayer is, don't approach me that way. Be who you are. Just come to me in and as the person that you are, that I created you to be. And again, what does that allow us? It allows us a lot of freedom. You're not getting graded. You're being invited. Third thing, pray privately more than publicly. This is an issue, I think, also that deals with prayer as an invitation to intimacy. It's a private thing. It's a communion between you and God. It's a place for you to share your heart and speak from your heart in a way that no one else is allowed to judge. Which is a great opportunity in this day and age where you probably feel and think a lot of things that you can't say and think in public. What an invitation to go before God and really unload how you feel. And I think we don't do very good at letting Christians be honest about their feelings and about what they're going through. We're constantly having to play this performance thing where we're thinking about how other people might think about what we say. And so to get this opportunity where God invites you to say, come and just be completely raw with how you are and where you're at. Wrestle with me. Share with me the truth of what's going on inside of you. Face how you really feel about something. And you know what happens when you speak about how you really feel about something? Sometimes you'll shock yourself. You'll be like, where did that come from? Why am I so angry? Why am I so scared? Why am I so bored? Why do I not seem to care even about where I'm at or thinking about? When you truly get someone to speak from their guts and from their heart, that's when you actually can see real change or real growth happen. When people are pretending and playing games and putting on masks and living a life of duty, you don't know who they are. And you know what happens to those kind of people? At some time in their life, they break and do something really crazy or devastating. And people all around them usually go, I never imagined they would do that. I can't believe they were at that place. I never would have guessed that was going on the inside of them. And that's why I think Jesus' invitation to us is, start in your relationship with Him being the person that you truly are. And He invites us to that and wants it. Everybody has a bathroom or a bedroom that isn't public, in the sense of you don't bring people over to your house and say, come on into the bedroom. We're gonna hang out tonight on our king size bed. And this, you know, don't mind the laundry or the bathroom, you know, just come on in. That's just way too intimate, right? We say, like, come to the front porch if they're, like, neighbors, you know, you start interacting there. And then slowly kind of moves in. And if they get really friendly, you know, maybe you let them use the bathroom in the master bedroom, you know, because they're going to blow it out or something. But in general, we keep people constrained to certain places based on intimacy, right? And I think sometimes in church, it's way too intimate for people at first. I think people are like, wow, I've been dragged into someone's, like, private love romance. And a lot of people are kind of like, you know, it's like sitting next to a couple who's making out. It's really awkward, right? It's like, I don't think you're supposed to do that here. And I think sometimes our spirituality and talk about prayer and worship can sometimes get close to that line where we're trying to be a real and intimate and loving community, but at the same time let people grow in being able to share on that level. And that's hard for a lot of people. Bring a lot of guys into church and say, sing, that's a challenge. Talk, that might be a challenge. Hug people, that can be a real challenge. We are, as Christians, we're real familiar with intimacy and how natural it is. But if you really think of coming out of maybe a non-Christian background or somewhere, unless you're drunk, that stuff doesn't usually happen. You know, the drunker you are, the louder they sing, all that kind of stuff. So it's really a different paradigm to come into and start learning about the Jesus way. And I think Jesus wants us to be as free in that and as human in that as possible. Pray meaningful words more than multiple words. Less is often more. If you are meaningful in what you say. We're used to babbling as the language Jesus even used, right? We're constantly on our phones, we're texting, we're in a whole culture of communication all the time. Words don't have as deep a meaning anymore. It's easy for people to say, I love you, and be like, I just met you. What are you talking about? You love me. People, you know, I got your back. Really? You got my back? What does that mean to people? I mean, there's so many ways that we devalue the depth of words. I think Jesus invites us into a spirituality with him, a relationship with him, that can be communicated simply. If you have someone you know, you guys can talk to each other and barely say anything and say a lot. Right? If you're a married couple, you've got words. You just say the words and they know whether you're in trouble or whether it's an invitation or whether it's whatever. There's just a way of communicating that doesn't have to be long and exhaustive. It's just like simple and to the point, and you guys know because you're on the same wavelength. You're in the same heart and mind. I think Jesus wants to get us to a place where you can speak words that are simple and to the point. I was in my kitchen doing the dishes the other day. And I was kind of frustrated that his presence and my interaction with him had seemed cold and a bit distant. And I'm sitting there washing dishes, and I'm like, right here, right now is where it matters. And I mean, I was kind of talking that way to Jesus, you know, like, it's not about church. It's not about a prayer meeting. It's not about anything. I'm washing dishes right now, and this is where I want to commune with you. It has to be real right here, Lord. You know, I've got lots of stuff to do, and if I'm going to commune with you, it's got to find its way into this stuff right here. And I was thinking today how in a number of instances I've had some meaningful answers to that prayer just within this last week, where I've realized looking back that I can see him revealing and communicating with me in an answer to that dishes kind of anger prayer. So pick words. But let them be simple. You don't have to ramble on and on. Sometimes just mentioning someone's name before the Lord is full of heart and passion and ethos, right? If you say the name of your friend or someone you care about right now that's going through something, you don't have to go in a long, you know, sermonette with Jesus. It's like, Lord, I bring to you, you know, Andy or Paul or Justin. You know what's going on in their life, and I'm speaking their name before you. And you know everything they need and everything they're going through in a way that I don't. But I just lift up their name to you. And that's a rich and meaningful moment. Doesn't have to be complicated. Last of all, relax. God's got this. That whole thing where Jesus closes out the whole thing basically saying, and I've just talked a lot about prayer, but let me just tell you this. God knows everything that's going on in your life. And so you don't really even have to worry about messing it up in that context, right? Because Paul says in Romans 8, we don't even know how to pray. That's why he put his spirit in us. So that the spirit in Romans 8 says, will pray in us with deep groanings and sounds and movements that are inexpressible even with human words. That God put a praying spirit in you that knows God's will completely. He's made you the temple from which his spirit will continually lift up intercession into the voice or into the heart and into the knowledge of the Father. You are a praying person even when your language or your mind and heart aren't totally there. God made you an incense of prayer by placing His Holy Spirit within you. You are a praying person even in times that you may or may not know it. Your spirit prays. Your spirit knows the will of God. You could be laying in your bed doing the dishes, driving, playing with the kids, picking up dog poop in the yard, whatever, and your spirit is alive and present and in communication with God, His will, and creation. And when we get in line with that and we kind of line up, that's when prayer takes on a life that is full of faith and full of energy. It's like we step into the river of what's already flowing instead of trying to pump that thing up, right? And so spending time in God's presence and becoming familiar with the Holy Spirit and the Word of God, that creates an even more deep experience with prayer. To know that God has me covered even when I don't feel like praying. There's times where I'm like, Lord, pray your words through me. Speak what you want to say. Feel through me. Break my heart with the things that break your heart. I need you to live out your praying life through me. I want to be the vessel in whom and through whom you speak to this world. In order for that to happen, you got to stir that spirit up in me. Because left to my own, I just kind of turtle up in life. I just withdraw and get into my comfortable shell and don't want to stick my neck out. I need you to kind of provoke me. Spur me on. I saw this YouTube video of this like guy who said his pet turtle thinks he's a dog. Have you seen that one? Where the turtle is chasing the ball around the kitchen. I have never seen a turtle run that fast, but he was chasing the ball. And I thought, wow, turtles can do amazing things. I always think of turtles in one way, but it's like sometimes I feel like that. This human being that needs God to draw me out somehow, right? I remember my son, this is totally not. Came to my mind. I remember my son found a turtle out in the street of our house when we first moved down to East Central. And it was a painted turtle, a really beautiful turtle that was in a puddle for some reason. And it's not indigenous to that East Central puddle life. So someone had released it or it had broken free, escaped in some way. And he brought it home. He's like, Dad, I found this turtle. And I'm like, that's great. Thinking salmonella all over his hands and, you know, the reptiles are not always easy. He's so cute. And he wanted to give him a little kiss, and the turtle bit him right, right on the lip. Wasn't it on the lip? Right on the lip. And I thought, for sure, rabies. I don't know if turtles have rabies. But that kind of creature, that kind of imagery in nature, to me, is often a picture of how we are internally. And I think the Holy Spirit within us draws us out. He gives us words. He groans within us. Sometimes, I mean, what an interesting... If you're going to describe what the Holy Spirit's going to do in a human being, the Holy Spirit through Paul or whatever, describes it as groaning. I would think that they would come up with something that sounds a little more, I don't know, Bible-ish or something. But for Paul to just say, you know what, God put a groaning thing in you. He just put something in you that God is just going to groan through you. You're just going to be a moaner, a whiner for Jesus or something. Isn't that a little odd to just think like, you know, like hunger pains? Or what do you mean groaning within me? And depending on your background, there's lots of ideas. But I like just thinking that God put his feeling heart into me. And if I will listen, I will hear the longings and the prayers of heaven being prayed for the people I love. And at times I align and join with that and find words for myself or song or something coming out. It's like God put an engine in you because he knew, left to ourselves, we just wouldn't get a lot accomplished that was meaningful. And so I find at the end of that prayer, great comfort in knowing, even if I don't even get these few things figured out, he still is the great helper inside me. Is that encouraging to anybody else than me?
Yeah.
Good, Justin. I'm glad that you want to pray more. You need to. go into your room or go into somewhere, shut the door, be alone. Now, I don't know how you practice that. You've got to figure out how to practice that principle in the life where you're at. For me, it looks like purposeful times of the year that I set aside and go away. So we go to Mount Angel or St. Gertrude's or Mount Schweitzer, where we put things on the calendar and say, this is going to be a time where we purposely step away from everything that's always shouting for our attention, and we're going to listen to our Father, we're going to listen to one another, and we're going to listen to our own soul. Got to put that on the calendar. Got to find a way to do that. I don't know how you figure out with kids. You know, you can do almost anything these days if you plan. And if you think it's something valuable to you, you will find a way to save for it and plan out, you know, multiple backup babysitter scenarios. I don't know. Or it'll be a season of life that you can't and you have to figure out another way to do it. Other ways I do it, I live in East Central, which right on the corner of 5th and Haven, which is a high traffic area, so there's always noise going on in our home world and life. So I've found a trail called the Ben Burr Trail that is a little nature trail that goes from Ben Burr Park or Underhill Park down to Liberty. It's about a, you know, 3/4 mile trail where I can go away and walk, and most times of the day that I'm there, nobody else is there. So I can talk, I can pray, I can listen, I can just be quiet. And so that's a sanctuary for me. Other sanctuaries for me are coffee shops, places where there's a lot of ambient noise that I can kind of get away in. And I'll be honest, there are times where I'll be in those places and be moved, you know, by the Lord in some capacity and be, you know, like trying to pull my hat down, you know, doing a little wet eye thing going, you know. The Lord has touched my heart in very true and meaningful ways in coffee shops where I'm just reading and praying and thinking and communing with God. And for me, sometimes the noise and the activity of everybody kind of becomes kind of a quarrel backdrop for me to just get lost in. So I've had to learn to practice to be able to be silent in noise more. When we have 4 kids at home, we only have 1 left. The reality of home life with children and dogs and animals and pets and video games and everything and fighting. You have to learn to be able to find silence in your bathroom, in the shower, in your bedroom, I don't know, after they go to bed. You have to figure that out. But I think the gift of solitude and silence is simply to be able to hear Him, hear one another, and hear your own soul, your own heart. And if you're not cultivating those practices to do that, you're not living the true abundant life and the human life that God designed you to live. If you're disconnected from what the Father is wanting to say to you, if you're disconnected from one another and what meaningful things we want to say, and if you're disconnected from what's even going on in your own heart and mind, you've got an invitation from the Lord to reconnect in a fresh way. I know that's not easy, though. Ryan Mann says, the more you seek God in silence, the more you will encounter Him in the noise. And I've found that to be true. How are we doing on time? I don't see no clocks, so we're going to have to...
You're great. No clocks.
Are we doing okay? We're almost done. Dean Farr said this, no soul can preserve the bloom and delicacy of its existence without lonely musings and silent prayer. And the greatness of this necessity is in proportion to the greatness of the soul. So my wife gave me another article that basically said the same thing from another angle. That said, the more active you are in life, the more you're in the business world and among all kinds of things, psychologically, we need for health the ability to get where it's quiet. If you think about how much noise is going on in your life, from the moment Siri tells you to wake up to someone tells you to go to bed, our day is just filled with noise. Constant voices for our attention, constant issues. And you've got to carve out some space there where you can reconnect with silence. It is a deep need in our culture. And it's funny when we go away to retreat and we say that there's going to be a period of no talking in our retreats, how much work it takes to get to a place where you can do that. We every year talk with one another and people how just the idea of I'm going to be from noon till 5 and not allowed to talk to anybody and I'm going to be silent. People are like, react to it. Because we live in a culture that is just constantly alive. And that can be difficult. I'll tell you, when we go away to the monasteries and places like that, and I see these guys, you know, in these rhythms of silence and quiet and everything, I'm more of an introvert person, so I really resonate and get charged up by that. And the thought of that is just delicious to me, but I don't live in that world. I live in a reality where my door is being knocked on a lot. My life is one of people coming this way all the time. I can't step out the door without there being some kind of element of chaos or life reality that demands my attention. And so sometimes solitude's difficult, and I can't live, and I don't live in an abbey. But I read this one little description from a guy down in Portland, an Episcopal priest that was really falling in love with monasteries and stuff, but realized that wasn't the call that God gave him. God said, you got to live right where you're living. And he wrote this little portion in his book called Urban Iona, Celtic Hospitality in the Center, or in the City. His name's Kurt Nelson. He says this: many years later, I came to myself and realized that though I don't live in a cloister or a monastery, I don't wear a robe with a cowl and a cincture, I have found my monasticism. My chapel is my parish church. My cell, or my small room where you're supposed to be alone, is my body or my bedroom as I rub sleep from my eyes and struggle to focus on the psalms and the readings before helping, feeding, and launching the kids off for the day. My cloister is the world and my life, lived quite strictly between home and church, my two communities. My poverty is dependence on God and simplicity and debt slavery mandated by raising 3 kids and helping to feed 5 people. My forgetting of myself is made real in my relationship with my wife, learning to love and to be loved and to make love and to forgive and to fight for dear life on a daily basis. Monastic indeed, the cloister would be a vacation by contrast, at least until I caught up on sleep and quiet. But I wouldn't take the cloister back. Here is where I have learned and am learning to be human. Marriage and family life, the path of my existence, has been graced, and this is my salvation. I thought that was a beautiful way of saying, you got to figure out how your life is your monastery. And you know what? All your situations are going to be different. The rhythms of your life and day are all different. But the call to prayer, the call to the Father, the call to quiet, and the call to speaking are for all of us. But all the contexts are going to be different. But the practices are the same. So when and where to pray? Your life is your monastery, like we just said. I love what in the rule of St. Benedict, it said this: let him or her regard all the utensils of the monastery and its whole property as if they were the sacred vessels of the altar. St. Benedict basically is saying, if you're even in the kitchen and you're playing with the spatulas and the dirty pans, you are to cultivate a mindset that all of these ingredients of everyday mundane life are actually the sacred vessels that you would see on some high church altar of communion, so to speak. Your life holds the things that are sacred. And us seeing that liberates us to realize all of life is the cathedral that God's placed us in. The babies, the kids, the duties, they all become offerings to the Lord as we blend them together in communication with God. Lord, help me have patience for my son, as we were at lunch and arguing, as the three of us always do at lunch, about how none of us seem to know anything. And those moments where I'm always, you know, in prayer, right? I'm like touching my wife under the table, which is my signal to, let's just let it go. Right? We have little communications. And she knew when I touched her leg with my foot, it was, this is a hopeless battle. Let's just back away. Right? Why is that? Because we communicate. We know each other. And all through the day, those are the things. I mean, I pray, since coming to some of the material that we've explored together as pastor friends, Lord have mercy, Christ have mercy, has become a prayer in my life that is full of meaning. Full of meaning whenever I pray, you know? No matter what situation it is, it's like this short prayer that the Lord knows I'm like throwing everything that I feel about into those two words, or those two phrases. Lord, have mercy. Be present. Help me. The situations, and many of them in my life, are it's way too deep for me. I can't touch. I'm here only because you tricked me. So help me. I read this prayer. I read this prayer online. It was a little prayer I thought was from Saint, not Saint Brother Lawrence, but after studying, I found out it isn't. But it's still got one of my favorite of all lines in the very first part. It's called Martha, and it's out of a book called The Great Women of the Bible. And I didn't search up to see who that was, so you'll have to do that work. But this is the little poem. It says this: Lord of all pots and pans and things, since I've no time to be a saint by doing lovely things, or watching late with thee, or dreaming in the twilight, or storming heaven's gates, make me a saint by getting meals or washing up the plates. Although I must have Martha's hands, I have Mary's mind. And when I black the boots and shoes, thy sandals, Lord, I find. I think of how they trod the earth, what time I scrub the floor. Except this meditation, Lord, I haven't time for more. Warm all the kitchen with thy love and light it with thy peace. Forgive me all my worrying, and make all my grumbling cease. Thou who didst love to give men food in room or by the sea, accept this service that I do. I do it unto thee. To me, that's a beautiful picture of someone who's figured out that their life is their prayer. And that God, you are not waiting to get over everything and get past everything and stop everything to get to the spiritual stuff. You're not going to become a saint. You are a saint right in the sanctuary of your life. And that's all the material that the Lord's called you to pray about. Your call is to take your life and discover God in it and at work in it, and to talk to God about it. And let God talk to you about it. You're to bring God, or you're to bring men and women to God, and bring God to men and women. And that's a prayerful life. And it's not complicated, or it's not supposed to be. I remember when I was in high school, I got a hold of a book by a guy named Larry Lee. He was like a real hot tamale at that time in the Christian world. And he had a Can You Not Tarry With Me an Hour book of prayer. Does anybody remember that book? Can You Not Tarry With Me? Or Mel. Yeah. I remember saying to myself, you know, I'm going to figure out how to pray for an hour. If I can get an hour down every day, I'm like a superstar. And I had recently been converted, so I was all about performance-based stuff in the church. I wanted everybody to know that even though I was a dropout, I was a superstar in Jesus. So I was like, I'm going to witness more other people. I'm going to be on the streets, go door to door. I'm going to be at every service that's for, you know, young people or old people. I'm just going to perform, because I found a community that loves performers. And I was hungry to get praise because I came out of a broken home. And so I learned that in the church, if you just show off a little bit in the Jesus stuff, man, everybody is your fan. And so I just ate that up. Then I found out you can get a job doing that. I thought, I am perfect for that job. So I got a hold of that book, and I think I accomplished it once. You know? And then I felt like a schmuck. It's like, I can't even, you know, no, I can't tarry with you, Lord, an hour. I would be totally Peter asleep. You know? When Jesus is saying to his disciples, you know, in the Gethsemane, it's like, what, you fell asleep again? Yep, that's me. I'm the praying saint, or the sleeping saint. You ever feel that way? I don't look at those books anymore. I am a mundane mystic. I'm a mundane mystic, and a mystic is an old word in Christian history. It's basically all those people that wanted to be in union with God. I want to be in union with God all throughout my day, beyond the reality that I'm in Jesus. I want to be in communion with Him. I want to see Him in all things. I want to be looking for Him, listening for Him, right? But I'm a mundane mystic. It has to be in the here and now. It has to be today. It has to be in East Central, among all the dog poop and needles and squealing dogs and everything. It's like, this has to be the place where you show yourself to be God of all things, or it's meaningless to me. It has to be here. If I lose Jesus after one argument with a three-year-old, it's not real enough for me. You know? The rule of St. Benedict says prayer should be short and pure, unless perhaps it's prolonged under the inspiration of divine grace. Prayer should be short and pure unless it's influenced under that divine, it's like He just, you know, takes you into something in prayer. Because I'll close with these two things. One of the things is about this simplicity is this, that the Lord will meet you. And that meeting with you in prayer in this capacity I'm talking about sometimes can be some of the most profound and spiritual moments of divine interaction that you ever experience. And I love that Brother Lawrence gives us a little picture of this in his book, Practicing the Presence of God. This is a funny little quote I'm going to read. If you're of charismatic background, you might relate to this a little bit more than others. If you don't, this is going to seem really left field for you. But listen to Brother Lawrence talk about his little prayer life. And his prayer life was basically, he was like in the kitchen most of the time. So he kind of cultivated a life of communion with God in the kitchen and doing household chores and duties in the monastery. And wrote a book about how that became like his Mount Sinai reality. It became the place where God revealed Himself to Lawrence. And he says this, it's one of my most favorite of all prayer quotes at all. He says, it's a little old English, so hopefully you can get it. He says, I have quitted all forms of devotion and set prayers, but those which my state obliges me to do. So in other words, he says, I canned everything. Except for the stuff I have to go do because I'm a monk here, you know, so maybe that was the hours or something. He said, but in general, in my own sphere, it's all been laid aside. He says, I make it my business only to persevere in His holy presence, wherein I keep myself by a simple attention and a general fond regard to God, which often causes me joys and raptures inwardly. And sometimes also outwardly, so great that I'm forced to use means to moderate them and prevent their appearance to others. What he's saying there is that he gets in moments of prayer and communion with God that physically overcome him in some capacity. Emotionally, I don't know, maybe it was, you know, the blow on someone and they fall over kind of reality. I don't know what he's describing. All he's saying is, listen, there are moments that are so profound in my simple prayer of just being fond with God and being attentive to His presence that He visits me inwardly in such a response of love and rapture and joy that I have to moderate it in just such a way that people might not think I've been drinking or something. Now, for the mystic or the charismatic in me, that's a wonderful invitation that God can be experienced anywhere, anytime, with anybody or with nobody. That His communion with us and His invitation to experience Him in relationship is an invitation that can happen everywhere. Does it happen that way all the time? No. Just like intimacy with, you know, in marriage is a gift of certain times and places. But there are moments in relationship with Jesus where He shows up and you're like, I did not know He was in this place. And that's a gift to me. So some questions to ask you in closing. Do you see prayer as a duty or desire today? Where is your spiritual appetite today? Are you satisfied, stuck, or starved? Do you have a place or a space for prayer? And what is your biggest difficulty with prayer? I think those are good questions to ask ourselves, to journal out, to maybe think about. And I think that if you get some of those questions moving, you'll find that there's a great invitation from the Lord to begin to talk to him about those things, and he will meet us in that way.